Hello, this is Cindy Zapataki filling in today for Tom Reed on his radio show, It Seems to Me. Our special guest today is State Senator Mike Padden of the 4th Legislative District, which includes Spokane Valley. We've asked Senator Padden to come by to give us an analysis of the just recently completed legislative session. How are you doing today, Senator Padden?
Well, I'm doing just fine. It's great to be here with you.
Well, it's a beautiful day outside. Spring is here and summer on the way, so that lifts everybody's spirits. So, Senator, can you give our listeners a bit of an introduction as to your background? I understand you grew up in Oregon?
Well, I was born in Portland, Oregon, but my dad worked for U.S. Steel Supply, so we moved around when he got transferred. We lived in the Tri-Cities and outside of Chicago, and then from about seventh grade on in Seattle, and I went to high school in Seattle and then came over to Gonzaga University for college and later law school.
Wonderful. That's an interesting travel log that you gave us. My first question has to be, what were your goals for the 2023 state legislative session?
Well, I knew we were facing a difficult structural disadvantage with the Democrats controlling the Senate 29-20. And it's not just that the Democrats are controlling the Senate, but the Democratic Party has moved farther and farther to the left every session, it seems. So we had our hands full. We were able to defeat some bad legislation. I was able to sponsor four pieces of legislation that were signed by the governor that help and dealt with reducing some taxes for wheelchairs, for people that have ALS or MS, improving home ownership by making it easier and more affordable to purchase condominiums by reducing some of the regulations, improving the business model of employee ownership, like Schweitzer Engineering down in Pullman. We found that through surveys, people are happier when they are owners of the business. They stay employed longer, then they retire in a better financial situation. Also, which is very appealing to me, their family life is better and less divorces. So we were happy to see that go. And the final piece of legislation dealt with public safety and protecting individuals in jails or prisons that are assaulted by guards. And all those bills passed unanimously and were signed by the governor.
So what about your party, your group as a whole? How did the bills fare that you as a group put forward?
Well, overall, it was an extremely disappointing session. The governor was intent on making our state an abortion destination state and also ignoring the laws of other states, such as our neighbor Idaho, if they interfered with his ideological bent to promote abortion at almost all costs. And so that was very disappointing. We had quite a battle over some public safety issues. We battled over parental rights and a number of other issues dealing with taxes. We won some of these battles, but very seldom was it good legislation being passed. It was defeating bad legislation.
Well, and I know that you put out a newsletter and you said you were talking about the special session. And you said that even though some changes were made to the pursuit bill, that you weren't happy with it because you didn't feel that it really solved the problem. Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. There were just six criminal actions that in that bill that the police were then allowed to pursue. The big one, auto thefts, were second in the nation. They were not allowed to pursue those. And it's not just the theft of autos. and people losing their cars or dealership losing their cars, it's these autos then are used to commit other crimes. So it's compounding the situation. And law enforcement was mixed. I mean, I'd like to see a little improvement, but it's still a major problem. And as you probably know, I'm no huge fan of the marijuana shops, but they have a unique situation because they have to deal in cash only because of the federal banking laws. And they're just setting targets, and they get a lot of criminal activity, and the criminals know the police aren't going to pursue them. So, well, it is a very modest start. Hopefully it can be built upon, but I don't know if it's going to be next session, which is a 60-day session, or is it going to have to be after that, and if the makeup of the legislature changes, because there is a core group that was very resistant even to these modest changes on the pursuit bill.
You've also been a strong advocate as a former judge for law enforcement. What do you see? What are your comments about the rising crime rates, not only in Seattle, but all over the state? What do you think needs to be done?
Well, it's alarming. It's a major crisis. And even right here in the Spokane area, the vacancy rate on commercial real estate is sky high and growing. And a lot of people are just waiting till their leases are expired before moving to the Valley or Liberty Lake or the West Plains or North Idaho. So it's very tough. And as much as I'm an advocate for my legislative district, which is the Spokane Valley in northeastern Spokane County, I don't want to see the city of Spokane completely collapse, but a lot of people just don't want to go to downtown Spokane because they're concerned about crime, concerned about the homelessness problem. There are some things that are being done and some of the legislation which I think will help on the margins, but it's going to take quite a while before Spokane returns to a place that you really want to go downtown and shop in.
What do you think about what's being done with the homeless situation?
Well, I think the answer is you got to deal with the root causes. You can't just provide housing, low barrier housing, if you're not doing something about the addictions. I like the approach of the Union Gospel Mission. And by the way, they take no government money, and they work with people on their addiction. Now, somebody's going to have to want to change. If they don't want to change, there's not too much that can be done. But if they want to change, they'll work with them, and they'll help them become clean and sober. They'll help them get a job. And with a lot of them, they can help put their families back together. And that's the approach I think we need to take across the board. And I think it's very helpful if it's a faith-based approach. And we have some good groups out there, Family Promise, the Union Gospel Mission, some of these other groups, and some that are forming. But we need to stick to that. What we've been doing hasn't been working.
Can you go into a little bit of detail on that, about state policies on behavioral health and mental illness? What are you hearing in the hearings that you sat through about all this?
Well, I think there's general agreement that it's a very serious problem, and the state has certainly appropriated a lot of taxpayers' money to help and have more facilities and opportunities for behavioral health, to deal with mental health, to deal with the tremendous increase in suicides with veterans and others. So they're doing that part. I guess it's still kind of early to see how effective it's going to be. There's other issues, like I say, if you have these addictions and things that have been decade-long habits, it's not easy to make that change. But that's what we need to have happen. We need to give assistance to do that. I was very disappointed that this year the expansion of assisted suicide passed the legislature, which I and others fought very hard. We had been able to defeat it the last 2 years. This year it passed. The vote was closer in the House than it's been in the past, but unfortunately it did pass the Senate, which it had not done previously. But this is you know, going to have these lethal drugs sent through the mail. They can end up in the wrong hands. Instead of getting a couple opinions, there's only one in the opinion that's required. And instead of waiting the 15 days, they reduced it down to 7. So what were safeguards when the people passed the initiative years ago? They've now become barriers, according to the proponents of the expansion of assisted suicide. We had a great coalition fighting it of doctors, faith-based people, and most importantly, the disability community, who are especially vulnerable to pressures. You know, the old adage or old saying that somebody's going to say, well, your life isn't worth living. Why don't you just go kill yourself rather than be a burden to the rest of us? And so we did fight that. Unfortunately, it won. But there is, again, like in so many of these things, legal challenges taking. And there's a major legal challenge in California that we're watching closely, a court case there, that if it's successful, could be replicated in our state.
Very good. It's good to hear. What about the parental rights situation? You have been involved in talking to people about 5599, which was a Senate origin bill, and then toenailing into that is the partner bill out of the House, which passed. The governor signed both of these, 1469. Can you talk a little bit about what those are about and what your concerns are?
And my concerns on 5599 are that it is a setback for parental rights. Under that legislation, a parent who's looking for a runaway has done nothing wrong, no abuse, no neglect. They're looking, they're very concerned. We got all these pressures now on social media, and we got pressures from people that are pushing an agenda for so-called gender-affirming care and pushing abortion. So they can be in a situation where they're not notified when the state actually has a runaway in a shelter. For a number of days, they wouldn't be notified. And this is fundamentally wrong. You know, the left talks so much about brain science and these young juveniles not being able to know right from wrong when it comes to criminal activity. But they say, hey, they know exactly what they want when they run away and are asking for gender-affirming care, and the parents know nothing. So we need to work hard to defeat that bill in the courts or through a referendum. It has been signed by the governor and will take effect July 23rd. But there is growing momentum, and I think there is a good chance it will be challenged legally and hopefully successfully.
Now, I understand that out of the Seattle side, there's a group, well, actually, there were three referendums that were filed with the Attorney General or proposed. There's one that a group led by Sharon Hanick wants to push forward with, and this is Referendum 101, which petitions will be coming out for soon. And then 1469, I understand, could be an initiative. Can you explain the difference between a referendum and an initiative?
Sure, and then I'll talk a little bit about 1469. An initiative is something that is originated by the people. It requires a greater number of signatures. It requires 8% of those people that voted in the last general election. Where a referendum is a vote on a bill that the legislature has passed, it requires signatures of 4%, so half as many as an initiative. And if it is filed, the bill is prohibited from going into effect until the time comes where the signatures have to be turned in. If enough are turned in, then it's delayed further until the vote. And if there is a no vote, that bill then does not go into effect. On 1469 is what's so-called shield law, to shield our state from laws that are legitimately passed in pro-life states, such as the state of Idaho, our neighbor, where they've passed a law that it's a criminal offense to kidnap a child and take him across state lines for an abortion. And yet our governor and our legislature says, you know, those laws should have no consequence, should not be enforced in our state. Well, if you pick and choose on all 50 states on which laws are going to be followed and which ones aren't, you've got a horrible mess out there. And that's why our founding fathers in the Constitution have the full faith and credit clause, which means the states are supposed to honor legitimately pass laws in other states. So I think that also is very vulnerable to a legal challenge, and hopefully that'll be forthcoming too. But they targeted especially pro-life laws in this, and if somebody was enforcing it, even if they had a legitimate warrant that was issued by a judge with due process and everything, this was saying, well, we're not going to honor that in the state of Washington.
I understand also that there is an initiative coming that will define what are parental rights in the state, that would sort of counter some of what was in those two bills. I would recommend that anybody go to the legislative site if you want to read these bills, and you need to, 5599 and 1469. You can go to the legislative site. You can look at bills for 2023. You can put those numbers in, and you can read the entirety of what the governor did sign. You will find them very egregious and concerning, I'm sure. There is a meeting tomorrow at Family of Faith Church. That would be the 2nd of June. It will be a group of people discussing these issues on 5599 and 1469. My understanding is there will be petitions available. The group that is running the referendum 101 is what they're running. We'll have to have 200,000 signatures by the end of July, which is a very narrow window to get the signatures they need to get this put on the ballot this November. So please monitor this, consider grabbing a petition, get your churches involved, because it's going to take a big push to be able to get this on the ballot and to overturn 5599. And we will be hearing, I'm sure, more about the initiative that's coming that will protect parental rights. Do you have other concerns? What do you think about some of the other bills? Are there any others that you were concerned with that passed this year?
Well, there are certainly a number of bills that have passed. I mean, the overall operating budget, I mean, the budgets are kind of the main thing, where there's three budgets: the operating budget, the capital budget, and the transportation budget. The operating budget is now $70 billion, and it's basically doubled in just about 10 years. And in that, there was all this additional money for abortions, and it also included the money the governor committed the state to without authorization for these chemical abortion pills, because he was afraid of a court decision maybe coming in Texas. Well, the decision didn't come as the governor thought. These pills at this point are not necessary. In a way, I wish they were, because then it would be more unborn lives would be being saved. But they're not necessary, and they're being stockpiled by the Department of Corrections. And nobody knows at this point the shelf life of those chemical abortion pills and where they were when they were purchased. That is information I'm trying to get out. I've written and asked for that information from some of the governor's administrators. So we'll see about that. In addition to that, they had again another study of removing the dams on the Snake River. And this is such a waste of money, because it's not even our decision. It's a decision of the federal government. And we know, as long as our congresswoman is chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee back in D.C. at the U.S. House, she has indicated there's no way that's going to happen. And of course, it doesn't really make any sense. So much of our agricultural product is shipped by barge from the Snake to the Columbia to the ports on the west side and shipped all over the world. And if they were taken down, you then would have a huge increase in diesel emissions from trucks that would have to take a lot of the slack up. So it really makes no sense, and at least initially from the information I've heard, the salmon runs are on the increase, and there's other things that can be done to encourage that. So, I mean, that was in there. And another thing that bothered me is there was no general property tax relief. I mean, we've got inflation at record highs. We've got seniors that I know, my constituents, that are being taxed literally out of their homes. These are people that maybe have lived in their house their whole life, and they're now on a fixed income. And because of the hot real estate market and inflation, the evaluations have gone up. And they can't afford to live in the house, so they sell the house or make other arrangements. But a lot of them have had to move out, and it's fundamentally unfair. The other thing is, even states that have Democrats in control of the entire state, the governor and both chambers of the legislature, a lot of them have passed tax relief. But our people refuse to do that on a general basis. They have some small tax relief for low-income folks that they've passed, but nothing broad-based for property tax or even sales tax. I personally think property tax is even more important to reduce than the sales tax. And when the Republican Senate proposed a budget 2 years ago, we had a proviso in there that the first $250,000 of evaluation on your house, you would pay no state property tax on that. And it was very doable. There's all this money. We could have offered relief, but no, it has to be spent. And reminds me of what Ronald Reagan said, that the closest thing to eternal life on earth is a government program.
That's so true.
And of course, they grow. And they require more taxes. So they, in fact, passed, and I was extremely disappointed with our state Supreme Court, they passed an income tax. And they disguise it as a capital gains tax, but you know it's going to be broadened to include other people. And every other state and the IRS has said it is not an income tax. It's not an excise tax. It's an income tax, which would not be, at least in the method they have, would not be constitutional in our state. Yet, here it is.
So, looking forward to next year, what do you think needs to happen in the legislature?
Well, what I think needs to happen, what will happen, are probably two different things based on the makeup of the legislature. So either down the road, we have to change the makeup of the legislature or convince people that are far, far to the left that, hey, there's something wrong with their position on this issue or that, which does occasionally happen. But we have to continue to work on public safety. I had a bill that looked like it was going to pass, and at the very end, the House didn't get to it, on the scourge of drunk driving that kills so many innocent people through vehicle homicide or vehicle assaults. And this bill would have reduced the number of vehicular homicides and vehicular assaults. And it did not make it, but we will try again next year. And it has broad support from the public, probably over 90%, and has passed the Senate unanimously the last few years, only this time to die in the House right at the end when they were scheduled to take it up. So there's a number of things, public safety, the habitual property offender. I've had a bill on that made some progress. And again, of course, all the pro-life bills, if we could get people to listen and look, I mean, it is amazing what's happening. They just recently did brain surgery on an unborn child. So I think the humanity of the unborn child is more evident than ever. And And people, a lot of people are changing their tune on this. And I'm happy to represent an area. We have pro-life billboards up in this area. One other thing I might point out to the listeners, and, you know, I always took heart in the statement that there's no sin that's too big that God will not forgive.
Amen.
And so there are folks that have had abortions, and I think they need our compassion, our sympathy, and everything else. But one thing that is available out there, Dr. Bill Lyle told me about this. He's known as the pro-life doctor. He's from Florida, but he came up here and spoke at a Walk for Life, that there's the abortion reversal pill, and it's successful 70% of the time. So there are some billboards here in Spokane where there's an 800 number to call publicize that. And so we can continue to need to do that. There's so many positive things in the pro-life movement, what's going on with the pregnancy care centers and all the benefits. People, some of the churches will take care of somebody with a child that needs help up to age 5. And the other thing I've just noticed, that there's some colleges that have special programs for single moms with children, and they provide free babysitting, housing, and other things, so somebody can get a college education and also raise the child. So a lot of positive things going on with the pro-life movement.
Well, I'm glad to end on that note. We're out of time. Do you and your lovely wife, Laura, who is a city councilwoman in Spokane Valley, do you have any special plans for summer?
Well, we are going to be going to a family reunion here pretty soon over on the west side. We look forward to that. I think it's actually in the area you used to live in, Alderbrook and Mason County.
Right.
So we're looking forward to that and seeing family and friends and staying busy with both council work and legislative work.
Well, we thank you both for your service and your dedication, not only to your own family, but to families in our area. I just want to say we wish you and Laura and your family a fun and restful summer ahead. And to all the people out there, you can get involved. You can find the groups that are representing your values, and we pray that you do. We hope that you monitor what goes on with some of these bills, like 5599 and 1469. There will be petitions coming out. Your church can participate, and you can encourage each other. So to all of you out there, we both wish you a safe and fun summer. This is Cindy Zapataki signing off.